Prvá časť testu – počúvanie. Táto časť testu sa skladá z troch nahrávok. Každú z nich budete počuť dvakrát. Počas počúvania odpovedajte na otázky, prislúchajúce k jednotlivým nahrávkam. Sledujte inštrukcie a piktogramy, aby ste vedeli, na ktorý odpoveďový hárok máte vyznačovať svoje odpovede. Teraz si pripravte odpoveďový hárok označený piktogramom krížik. Prvá nahrávka. Vypočujte si interview s Kevinom Farleym, mladým hercom, spisovateľom a režisérom v Hollywoode. Na základe vypočutého vyberte správnu odpoveď. Vždy je správna iba jedna z ponúkaných možností. Svoje odpovede vyznačte na odpoveďovom hárku označenom piktogramom krížik. Teraz máte 2 minúty na prečítanie úloh 1 až 7. Teraz si vypočujte ukážku.
Kevin Farley is one of the fastest rising stars in Hollywood. Let's listen to an interview with this talented actor, writer, and director.
I read that you co-wrote, co-directed, and starred in the upcoming film Hollywood and Wine. How do you feel working behind and in front of the camera? Which do you prefer?
You know, I honestly think that there are benefits to both. I find that acting is a lot of fun, but directing and writing is somehow more fulfilling. It's a lot of work, and when you're finished with directing and writing, and people enjoy what you do, you get a feeling of satisfaction from them. Performing is pure fun for me.
Could you tell our listeners a little of what the movie is about?
The movie is about two characters that are in love. Chris Catton plays one, and Nikki Whelan plays the other. She's from Australia and a wonderful actress. Both characters work in a restaurant, and Nikki's character, Diane, would like to become an actress in Hollywood. Diane's boyfriend helps her to get ahead, but he ends up in a lot of trouble. It's a really funny movie. It's coming out in the autumn.
Why did you decide to become a part of Hollywood and Wine?
My friend, Matt Berman, wrote the original script, and he asked me to help out. Also, my brother John was involved in one of the minor roles, and I like to work with both of them a lot.
Can you tell us a little about your current projects?
Right now, I'm working on a movie called Back in the Saddle. It looks like we might begin shooting in Wyoming in the autumn.
I read that you wrote a script for Back in the Saddle. Where did you get the idea from?
I've always been influenced heavily by Blazing Saddles, which is actually my favorite movie. It's one of those movies I watch to get me out of a bad mood. I think that's what my inspiration was. I've always wanted to do a Western, so one day I made up my mind to write the funniest Western I could possibly write. I also wanted to show my admiration for great Westerns like Unforgiven and actors like Clint Eastwood.
What pushed you into the field of writing, directing, and acting?
I think in Hollywood, if you're not growing, then you're not doing anything. You always have to be growing as you get older, and you have to keep on learning even more intensely. I found out I had to study much more when I graduated from college.
You've been part of so many projects, but being in a boy band was probably different from anything else you've done?
To be in a boy band where girls are chasing after you is truly an experience. I believe I was 36 at the time, and I had just lost my brother Chris. Singing in a band was a joyful thing, but it was also very hard because my brother died at that time too. So it was a mixture of extreme fun and some sad times.
Who had the most influence on you in your personal and professional life?
I started doing this because of my brother Chris. I'm influenced by his motivation for acting and performing. I was very close to my brother, so I think of him often when I write or perform. He died at a young age, and I just hope to carry on some of the enthusiasm and hard work he showed.
Teraz si vypočujte ukážku ešte raz.
Kevin Farley is one of the fastest rising stars in Hollywood. Let's listen to an interview with this talented actor, writer, and director.
I read that you co-wrote, co-directed, and starred in the upcoming film Hollywood and Wine. How do you feel working behind and in front of the camera? Which do you prefer?
You know, I honestly think that there are benefits to both. I find that acting is a lot of fun, but directing and writing is somehow more fulfilling. It's a lot of work, and when you're finished with directing and writing, and people enjoy what you do, you get a feeling of satisfaction from them. Performing is pure fun for me.
Could you tell our listeners a little of what the movie is about?
The movie is about two characters that are in love. Chris Catton plays one, and Nikki Whelan plays the other. She's from Australia and a wonderful actress. Both characters work in a restaurant, and Nikki's character, Diane, would like to become an actress in Hollywood. Diane's boyfriend helps her to get ahead, but he ends up in a lot of trouble. It's a really funny movie. It's coming out in the autumn.
Why did you decide to become a part of Hollywood and Wine?
My friend, Matt Berman, wrote the original script, and he asked me to help out. Also, my brother John was involved in one of the minor roles, and I like to work with both of them a lot.
Can you tell us a little about your current projects?
Right now, I'm working on a movie called Back in the Saddle. It looks like we might begin shooting in Wyoming in the autumn.
I read that you wrote a script for Back in the Saddle. Where did you get the idea from?
I've always been influenced heavily by Blazing Saddles, which is actually my favorite movie. It's one of those movies I watch to get me out of a bad mood. I think that's what my inspiration was. I've always wanted to do a Western, so one day I made up my mind to write the funniest Western I could possibly write. I also wanted to show my admiration for great Westerns like Unforgiven and actors like Clint Eastwood.
What pushed you into the field of writing, directing, and acting?
I think in Hollywood, if you're not growing, then you're not doing anything. You always have to be growing as you get older, and you have to keep on learning, even more intensely. I found out I had to study much more when I graduated from college.
You've been part of so many projects, but being in a boy band was probably different from anything else you've done?
To be in a boy band where girls are chasing after you is truly an experience. I believe I was 36 at the time, and I had just lost my brother Chris. Singing in a band was a joyful thing, but it was also very hard because my brother died at that time too. So it was a mixture of extreme fun and some sad times.
Who had the most influence on you in your personal and professional life?
I started doing this because of my brother Chris. I'm influenced by his motivation for acting and performing. I was very close to my brother, so I think of him often when I write or perform. He died at a young age, and I just hope to carry on some of the enthusiasm and hard work he showed.
Teraz máte ešte jednu minútu na dokončenie práce na úlohách 1 až 7. Druhá nahrávka. Vypočujte si skutočný príbeh mladej matky. Na základe vypočutého rozhodnite o každom z tvrdení 8 až 13, či je pravdivé A, nepravdivé B, alebo z nahrávky nevyplýva C. Svoje odpovede vyznačte na odpoveďovom hárku označenom piktogramom krížik. Teraz máte 2 minúty na prečítanie úloh 8 až 13. Teraz si vypočujte ukážku.
You will hear the true story of Lucy, a teenage mother.
When I was 17 years old, I had a baby girl, Emily. I can't remember all the usual details that most mothers do about their children, the time she was born or how much she weighed, because I was barely aware of it at the time. I couldn't think about the future or the fact that I no longer had one. Mom was pushing me for adoption, but I would never be able to deal with such an idea. I finished my A-levels as officially planned by the school and managed acceptable grades. I tried university, but away from home with an 18-month-old and without my mom to do babysitting, I gave up. One day, my dad sent me a letter telling me what a disappointment I was. First, I cried, and I agreed with him. A couple of weeks later, I decided to do something about it and enrolled on a journalism training course. For the first time, I could see a way out. I felt lighter. At that time, I even began dating someone, Tom, who I'd known since school. But then, I am embarrassed to admit it, I was expecting my second baby. I couldn't deal with it. I just carried on planning for my course. Nothing was going to stop me. Max was born during my first term. Thanks to my family, I was back in class after 3 weeks. I loved using my brain and going home with something else to talk about. I was tired. Emily, Max, Tom, and I were all sharing one bedroom, and we had no money. But I was happy. I couldn't afford to spend months working for free to gain experience like other graduates, so I found myself an administrative job in a publishing company and crossed my fingers. I was out each day from 7:30 a.m. until 7 p.m. I made it home for bedtime and left again as soon as the children were up and dressed in the morning. I worked harder than many older men and women there. I got 2 promotions, and soon I was responsible for budgets, sections of the magazine, and looking after our regular contributors. I called upon parents and friends to help out while I stayed in the office until 10 p.m. and went to finish work at weekends. When I left the job to move to a bigger magazine, my editor-in-chief took me out to lunch. As we walked back to the office, he asked whether he could give me some advice. He told me, "I can see that you work so hard. You must be trying to prove something. But the only person you need to convince is yourself." I realized it only at that moment, but I knew he was right. I wanted to show my school friends, my colleagues, and most of all my father, that I could cope with the situation and that I didn't spoil my life. When I was 27 and got married to Tom, I realized that the shocked or surprised faces of the people around were replaced by impressed looks and words of encouragement.
Teraz si vypočujte ukážku ešte raz.
You will hear the true story of Lucy, a teenage mother.
When I was 17 years old, I had a baby girl, Emily. I can't remember all the usual details that most mothers do about their children, the time she was born or how much she weighed, because I was barely aware of it at the time. I couldn't think about the future or the fact that I no longer had one. Mom was pushing me for adoption, but I would never be able to deal with such an idea. I finished my A-levels as officially planned by the school and managed acceptable grades. I tried university, but away from home with an 18-month-old and without my mom to do babysitting, I gave up. One day, my dad sent me a letter telling me what a disappointment I was. First, I cried, and I agreed with him. A couple of weeks later, I decided to do something about it and enrolled on a journalism training course. For the first time, I could see a way out. I felt lighter. At that time, I even began dating someone, Tom, who I'd known since school. But then, I am embarrassed to admit it, I was expecting my second baby. I couldn't deal with it. I just carried on planning for my course. Nothing was going to stop me. Max was born during my first term. Thanks to my family, I was back in class after 3 weeks. I loved using my brain and going home with something else to talk about. I was tired. Emily, Max, Tom, and I were all sharing one bedroom, and we had no money. But I was happy. I couldn't afford to spend months working for free to gain experience like other graduates. So I found myself an administrative job in a publishing company and crossed my fingers. I was out each day from 7:30 a.m. until 7 p.m. I made it home for bedtime and left again as soon as the children were up and dressed in the morning. I worked harder than many older men and women there. I got 2 promotions, and soon I was responsible for budgets, sections of the magazine, and looking after our regular contributors. I called upon parents and friends to help out while I stayed in the office until 10 p.m. and went to finish work at weekends. When I left the job to move to a bigger magazine, my editor-in-chief took me out to lunch. As we walked back to the office, he asked whether he could give me some advice. He told me, "I can see that you work so hard. You must be trying to prove something, but the only person you need to convince is yourself." I realized it only at that moment, but I knew he was right. I wanted to show my school friends, my colleagues, and most of all my father, that I could cope with the situation and that I didn't spoil my life. When I was 27 and got married to Tom, I realized that the shocked or surprised faces of the people around were replaced by impressed looks and words of encouragement.
Teraz máte ešte 1 minútu na dokončenie práce na úlohách 8 až 13. Teraz si pripravte odpoveďový hárok označený piktogramom pero. Tretia nahrávka. Vypočujte si rozhlasovú reláciu, v ktorej odborníci poradia, ako pomôcť priateľom v ťažkostiach. Dozviete sa 6 praktických nápadov. Tieto sú zhrnuté vo vetách označených 14 až 20, avšak nie v poradí, v akom ste ich počuli v nahrávke. Na základe vypočutého zoradte vety do správneho poradia tak, že zapíšete do odpoveďového hárka ku každej z nich príslušné poradové číslo od 1 do 6. Pozor, jedna veta je navyše a obsahuje informáciu, ktorú ste v nahrávke nepočuli. K tejto vete napíšte do odpoveďového hárka označenie X. Svoje odpovede napíšte na odpoveďový hárok označený piktogramom pero. Teraz máte 2 minúty na prečítanie úloh. Teraz si vypočujte ukážku.
Friends can face all sorts of difficult issues. Eating disorders, health troubles, the loss of a parent, disappointment in love, or even depression. How should you communicate with a friend in trouble, especially if you're not exactly sure what's wrong? Here's how. Simply follow our suggestions. Suggestion number one. Make sure you have evidence that your friend has a problem. Have you noticed a major change in their behaviour? Have other people witnessed any changes in their behaviour or given you ideas about what the problem might be? Or is it possible that your friend is just in a bad mood? Suggestion number two. If you have reason to believe your friend is in trouble, think of a suitable way to express your worry. A sentence such as, "I notice you've been looking unhappy lately and acting differently from usual," could be a good starting point. They are likely to ask you how they seem different. Suggestion number three. Prepare yourself for a bad reaction from your friend. It is quite possible that they will deny having a problem, get defensive, or feel embarrassed because they've been trying to hide the problem in order to seem normal to others. If your friend is not willing to discuss the problem with you, accept it and wait for a more suitable time. Suggestion number four. Mention the problem again after a few days or weeks. Remind them that no problem is too big or scary for your friendship. Your friend may fear that you will leave them if the problem is a serious one. Persuade them that you are ready to stay with them and stick up for them. Suggestion number five. If your friend is willing to share details about the problem, listen calmly and carefully. Ask them how the problem began and how they are feeling about it. Ask them what you can do to help. Suggestion number six. If your friend refuses to talk about the problem and it seems to be getting worse, you may need to ask a parent, teacher, counsellor, or someone your friend trusts very much to help. Offer to go with them for moral support.
Teraz si vypočujte ukážku ešte raz.
Friends can face all sorts of difficult issues. Eating disorders, health troubles, the loss of a parent, disappointment in love, or even depression. How should you communicate with a friend in trouble, especially if you're not exactly sure what's wrong? Here's how. Simply follow our suggestions. Suggestion number one. Make sure you have evidence that your friend has a problem. Have you noticed a major change in their behaviour? Have other people witnessed any changes in their behaviour or given you ideas about what the problem might be? Or is it possible that your friend is just in a bad mood? Suggestion number two. If you have reason to believe your friend is in trouble, think of a suitable way to express your worry. A sentence such as, "I notice you've been looking unhappy lately and acting differently from usual," could be a good starting point. They are likely to ask you how they seem different. Suggestion number three. Prepare yourself for a bad reaction from your friend. It is quite possible that they will deny having a problem, get defensive, or feel embarrassed because they've been trying to hide the problem in order to seem normal to others. If your friend is not willing to discuss the problem with you, accept it and wait for a more suitable time. Suggestion number four. Mention the problem again after a few days or weeks. Remind them that no problem is too big or scary for your friendship. Your friend may fear that you will leave them if the problem is a serious one. Persuade them that you are ready to stay with them and stick up for them. Suggestion number five. If your friend is willing to share details about the problem, listen calmly and carefully. Ask them how the problem began and how they are feeling about it. Ask them what you can do to help. Suggestion number six. If your friend refuses to talk about the problem and it seems to be getting worse, you may need to ask a parent, teacher, counsellor, or someone your friend trusts very much to help. Offer to go with them for moral support.
Teraz máte ešte jednu minútu na dokončenie práce na úlohách 14 až 20. Ukončite prosím prácu na tejto časti testu. Pokračujte prosím v práci na ďalších častiach testu.